Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I was born in D.C. We moved to Prince George's County when I was a year old, and we lived in Chapel Oaks. And from that, I went to Fairmont Heights High School, Fairmont Heights Elementary School, and 1 year at Southeastern University. Just a hardworking young man trying to move up and raise a family. I got married when I was 16 years old. So I've just been, you know, trying to keep it going, that's all.
You got married at 16 years old. Was that a hard thing to do at 16? I mean, could you imagine that years ago, getting married at 16 years old? And you're still married today, correct?
Yes, the same lady.
Now, that is amazing. That is truly amazing. Tell us how hard it was to get married at 16 and what made you stay so focused on marriage to be married still today.
Well, what happened was at that time I was had been going with her ever since I was in the seventh grade, and she got pregnant. When she got pregnant, we decided to get married. At the time, I was in the hospital, at Henry State Hospital, with tuberculosis, and my family really didn't want me to do it, my entire family almost, but I was persistent. And when I found out that I could do it without her signature, my mother's signature, I went on and I did it. And we've been going ever since.
I want to commend you. That's amazing, because marriage is not easy, especially, and if it's even harder, if you become with some kind of notoriety, or you become famous, or you get to be what they call popular. Marriage seems to be even harder. But as PG County, you was elected the first African-American senator from Prince George's County. Even today, you seem to be, what do you call it, remain the closest thing to a political boss. You still have political clout. All these years, you still have political clout because you're connected to people who was there from the very beginning. You watched PG County build to the actual political aspect of the day. Tell us about the early years of Prince George's County when they had no structure of black people in power in PG. How did you get to be involved with the political aspect of growing Prince George's County?
Well, you know, back in those days, like you said, we didn't have any black elected officials countywide. But we had a couple of black mayors and fire chief, local fire department. And then we relied on our principal at high school. He was very active, Mr. Golston. So those are the people that we went to get help politically or socially or what have you. And that's how it was. I got started from, I think I was about 16 years old. One of the local organization chiefs, Dr. Robinson, who was head of the ad hoc committee of Prince George County in our community, he took a liking to me and saw that I was looked like I was one of the coming up young men. And I think I was about 18 years old. He invited me to a meeting of the ad hoc committee, which was the black leaders in Chapel Oaks, Fairmont Heights area. And I went there, and they kind of adopted me. Everybody in the room was like 50, 60, 70 years old. I was just a little man in the room. And so Doc helped me to get involved with politics. And from that, I got married, moved to Glen Arden, bought my first house when I was 19 years old, had worked two jobs. I went to Fairmont Heights High School, and from that to Southeastern University under vocational rehabilitation, because when I left the hospital, they put me on vocational rehabilitation, so I did that. And I just got involved. And I think when I moved to Glen Arden, Glen Arden was a very political town. I ran for the council and ended up winning the council seat in Glen Arden. And from that to the Democratic Central Committee of Prince George's County. When I ran for the Prince George County Democratic Central Committee, I had to run countywide, and they chose 11 people out of the group. So you had to run, and I ran and won that seat. I was supported by labor. I mean, a little bit about labor. So, you know, I had to run countywide. I came in number 6 out of 11. So from that, I spent 4 years on the Democratic Central Committee. At the time, I was the only black on the Central Committee. And at that time, the Central Committee had a lot of clout because we chose people to represent Prince George's County. And we met, you know, to pick elected officials from Prince George County, and he sent the names to the governor. So at that time it was a powerful position, and it still is powerful, but we represented the Democrats of Prince George County. And on that committee, I was instrumental in getting a lot of people nominated or selected for different positions, you know, parking planning, WSSC, school board, judges, because we sent the names up to the governor for those appointments. And I got to be very strong on the committee because the committee was basically split, you know, right down the middle with five white conservatives and five liberal people and me. And I was almost the deciding vote on most of the issues. So I used that, you know, to leverage it. And the names that I sent forward was taken. So we built a little, you know, a little power there. And from that, they did reapportion. It went through reapportionment in Prince George County. And they kind of drew a district for black people, majority blacks. And I ran for the state senate for that position against a former delegate, Arthur King, whose mother was head of NAACP for Prince George's County. And I ran against him. He was a delegate for 8 years. But throughout our community, I was pretty popular. And I decided when I was running to do a letter to ask the Prince George County blacks in my district to support me. And I had them to sign like a petition. And I think I got about 75 names on that petition that they would support me for the Senate. And I presented that to the Democratic Central Committee, and they asked me to run for the House of Delegates. And I said, no, I'm running for the Senate. So I ran, and I knocked doors in Prince George's County, I mean, in this district, on a lot of doors. And I told them that my opponent would not be knocking doors because he was an educator and a very bright guy, but he just, that was, I think, beneath him. But anyway, I ran for the Senate, and I won almost 2-1. And I beat him almost 2-1. And from that, that's how I arrived in the state Senate. But and in the state Senate, as soon as I got there, the issue was who's going to be the president of the Maryland State Senate. And we got together in Prince George's County, and Stinney wanted to run for the president of the Senate. And Stinney and I were close because I helped him to win his seat from his district because he had to come through Fairmont Heights in that area to get elected. And Stinney was one of the guys who talked about knocking doors. So Stinney and I knocked doors. But the point is that in helping Stinney get elected, you know, we became buddies, friends. And when Stinney wanted to run for the president of the Senate, he came to me and said, look, I need help, you know, in the black community and try to get some of the blacks on in the Senate to endorse me. Well, I had only been to Annapolis twice in my whole life. And only one I knew from the Senate was Clarence Mitchell, who came to Prince George's County to help us get things done. That's the only name I knew. I'll make a long story short. Stinney asked me to get the black support. So I had only been in Annapolis once. But the point is that I went around to the black senators and asked them to support Stinney, and Stinney got 5 votes out of 6 to be the president of the Maryland State Senate. Stinney won the president of the State Senate by 1 vote. So after he won, you know, we meet to get appointments to committees. Stinney put me on budget and taxation, which was a new committee, which was the power of the Senate, 11 members. And the president, the chairman of Prince George's County, the chairman of Montgomery County, the chairman of Tri-County, the chairman of the minority leader of the Senate, all the wheels, the super big wheel, was on that committee. And I was a freshman senator. And Stinney appointed me to that committee, and that's history because what it did was put me in a position to deal with the budget. And I was very outspoken on the budget, fighting for social issues and black appointments and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm good at figures. You know, and I don't know how Stanley knew that, but I'm good at figures. But the point is that it put me in a powerful position. And I had told Stanley and our delegation that, hey, look, I had not planned to be in the Senate or anywhere in politics because I wanted some power. I didn't want 20 years to get the power. And Stinney put me on that committee, and that's history because I did an awful lot for Baltimore City and Prince George's County and the state of Maryland and minorities and as far as raising money for colleges and getting jobs and all that for the people of the state of Maryland. And this area, I got about 15 to 20 appointments to key boards and commissions. And my delegation, we met bi-monthly to discuss appointments and positions. And that's how we got a lot of blacks in key positions, parking planning, WSSC, different boards and commissions. And we was building a power base, you know. And everything they did in Prince George's County, as far as voter registration, my district was tops in everything. They had a, what they call dollars for Democrats to raise money for the Democratic Party. We came in number one. They had to, they started an organization called the Plowman and Fisherman, which you had to pay $100 a year membership. That was back then now. And that was the elite organization of Prince George's County, the Democrats. Well, I sold 50 tickets. And when I sold 50 tickets, I was the number one seller of tickets for Prince George's County. And I had a chance at the big meeting, a big dinner that we had. I sat, they let me sit at the table with the governor, which was Governor Mandel, okay? And they acknowledged that I had won, you know, my district had won selling the tickets. So, and we, so what we did was that everything they came up with, we tried to beat them at it. For instance, they never had a lot of blacks participating in political organizations in Prince George's County. I, when we had different functions, we had blacks attending the functions. When they did licking stamps, you know, they did that for volunteers, I had 15, 20, 30 people coming to that. They never had that before. So everything that we did was just new, you know, and we tried to beat them at every game. But for that, for doing that, my thing was that if we participate and we do all this, you must help us. You must help us move up the ladder. And that's how we started getting appointments and all that kind of stuff. And in my district, we met biweekly to discuss issues that concern our people and positions throughout Prince George's County. We, my district met, and my three delegates, my everybody that was in my organization, you know, the wheels, we met to discuss what was going on. And from that, we tried to pick the best out of our community to represent us in boards and commissions. And we got so good at it that, because nobody else was doing that, you know. And we got so good at it that people that were not in our district wanted to be a part of what we were doing. You know, so we just, we got a good base. And from building from that, at election time, what we did was we voted as a block. You know, black, basically our black community voted as a block. We were number one in voter registration, you know. Number one in dollars for Democrats. We were doing everything that, that, you know, that we could do to build up political power. We were number one in voter registration, and from that, when we ran, when we voted, our district was number one in electing Democrats in Prince George's County. You know, even though we were not the largest district, but we voted as a block, you know. So we just, you know, we developed power. And we used it, you know. The thing was that we do for you, you must do for us. And that was our attitude. And we were so good at it that to win countywide, you had to come through the 24th legislative district. You know, we almost determined who was going to be countywide elected officials because we so by us voting as a block. And for instance, in the district, they would have when they count the votes in my precinct. The votes would be like 700 to 3, 700 to 10, you know, because there were not a lot of Republicans in my district. But the point is that our people came out to vote. And that determined who was going to be the county executive, who was going to be the sheriff, who was going to be the state's attorney. And we got to be known as the power base. So from that, we moved ahead. And she pressed your
account. That's when I met you, Tommy. That's when I met you, Tommy. I knew that you were somebody. You came from poverty to becoming one of the most influential power brokers in PG County. Like you say, you had your pulse on who could be county executive, who could be anything in PG County was running for office. That block of voters that you had your pulse on could make it happen.
Yes.
I met Steny Hoyer through you. You don't remember this, but I met Steny Hoyer at a wedding. I was the only publication to cover Wayne Carey's wedding at this house on top of a hill off of Route 50.
Right, right.
And, remember that big house? I mean, we were
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And we were, and when I saw the people come through that door, I mean, the heavy hitters, the movers, and I mean, Steny Hoyer was a young person going into politics, and he walked right up to you, and I watched him talk to you. I said, this man knows Steny Hoyer like he's a personal friend. I said, this guy's
connected.
Well,
we became very close because when Steny wanted to run for Congress, number one, like I told you, our relationship in the Senate. Steny was the president of the Senate, put me on budget and taxation. But when he wanted to run for, when Steny ran for governor, I mean lieutenant governor, they lost. But Steny was almost out of politics because he lost, and he was not a senator anymore. But the point is that I backed him, and Steny, they lost the election. Him and the lieutenant governor, Brad Lee, their ticket lost. But basically. And I supported Steny after that because some people in Prince George County did not want Steny back involved in politics in Prince George County. Well, I was not one of those people. So what I did was when Gladys Spellman got sick, her seat came available, and most people was pushing her husband, who was a nice gentleman, nice person, and normally. When that happens, somebody leaves office, they usually turn it over to their spouse. Well, I went for Steny. And because I felt that Steny was a former president of the Maryland State Senate, he was a heck of a legislator, he'd be a good person in Congress because he would not only vote our way, but he's an initiator. He knows about how to get things done. But make a long story short, that I supported Steny. And our district supported Steny over Gladys Spellman's husband, and it was overwhelming, you know. And how that happened was that when we did phone calls and all that kind of stuff to get people to support Steny, I got on the phone and told everybody, said, look, you tell them that Tommy Broadwater supporting Steny. And what happened was, when Steny won, it was unheard of, okay. For a person to win over a spouse. But when it got to the Senate, Annapolis, everybody said, Tommy, how'd you do that? Well, you know, what's going on? How did it happen? But just the point is that our district pulled him through. And Steny was the right choice because you see where he is now. You know, he's the second person in the House of Representatives in the United States of America, you know. So he was just a good person, a good choice for that position. But the point is that we had a heck of a relationship, and he was instrumental in helping us get things done in our community or throughout Prince George's County. And it was just that type of situation. But it was all about power, all about getting respect and about power and trying to use power the way you're supposed to use it. You know, Wayne Curry.
That's what makes you so powerful because, see, you were the face. Tommy, you was the face. You became the face of the African-American political advancement and empowerment in the county. I mean, nobody came up if they didn't come through you, including Rashad Baker, the former county executive, Jack Johnson. None of them did not make their way down to the Ebony Inn. The Ebony Inn was an institution of what they call a speakeasy, the best barbecue, the ribs, the chicken, and then you had a liquor store and a Bales Bondsman and adult entertainment. Tell us about how you was able to formulate that combination where you had a black man with a liquor store. Come on, Tommy.
Let's show you how important Ebony Inn was. Ebony Inn was the focal place where we met to have the events. Most of my events was either at the Glen Arden Town Hall or at Ebony Inn. But Ebony Inn was the one who raised the money. You know, the Maryland State Black Caucus, okay, the whole Maryland State Black Caucus got started at Ebony Inn. We were the ones who raised the money for the Maryland State Black Caucus to get started. We raised, I think it was $8,000, $9,000 that night. Jesse Jackson, when Jesse Jackson ran for president, the first fundraiser in Prince George's County was at Ebony Inn. And we raised a lot of money for him at that fundraiser, okay? And what we did was Jesse sent me out there to talk to people to raise money, and I had people, five or six people, to give $5,000 toward Jesse's campaign. The second one, when Jesse and I met in Baltimore at the union event, I sat next to him. He says, "Tommy, I need some money. I got to raise some money. You know, you did a good job, but I need some more money." So we gave another fundraiser for him at Glen Arden Town Hall, okay? And we asked people to raise money. I was the second or third top fundraiser for Jesse in Maryland, okay? So, you know, we use our organization and our power to get money. But not only that, from the Maryland State Black Caucus thing, we gave another fundraiser, raised money for the Maryland State Black Caucus. But the base was in Prince George's County. When I think it was Governor from California, Brown, when Governor Brown ran for President of the United States, the bus that he toured with in Maryland stopped at Ebony Inn for a fundraiser. That's Governor Brown now. Back then, Ebony Inn was a spot. I gave most of my fundraisers from there, and we invited people all over the state and the county. You know, Winnie Kelly made the statement that he was county executive. He made a statement that he loved coming to Ebony Inn, and he loved bringing his wife there. And that was, at that time, you know, it wasn't a whole lot of mixed races together doing events like that. But the point is that he felt so relaxed. You know what I'm saying now? He felt so relaxed and bringing his wife there and enjoying himself that was nothing. He said, "Man, you know, this is great," you know. And what we did was bring the black and white community together, especially the Wheels, to socialize together and get to know one another. And the governor came, county executive came, the controller, Louis Goldstein, all of them. They came to Ebony Inn. I got pictures of all those people at Ebony to come there to socialize, and we raised money. And I was one of the top three or four fundraisers of persons in Prince George's County. You know, I mean, over the county executive or the controller, anybody like that, the black community raised more money than most of them. And what we did was we didn't have a lot of top you know, $500, all that kind of stuff. But I gave a lot of events. I gave a Christmas party, a Mother's Day thing, all kinds of events during the year to raise money for us to function. So we didn't have to ask people or beg for money like a lot of our black politicians do. We raised money because we gave a lot of events. Then I had an annual picnic or two where we had the barbecue, hot dogs, hamburgers, and there were so many people that nobody had ever seen anything like that. We had 2,000 and 3,000 people at a free barbecue.
I've been to some of those
free
barbecues.
We did it annually.
Fantastic. I came to a lot of them.
Yeah, you know. So what we did in our community, we gave events to get people involved and to let people know who the elected officials were, and to just get power. And nobody had ever seen that before, you know, in Prince George's County. They'd never seen that. And the people came out to vote, and they voted like we asked them to vote. And that's what it's all about in politics, is power through the vote. And with registration, you know, they had $1 for Democrat throughout the county now that you had to put a dollar for a vote or $1 for a raffle that they had. Well, we won the raffle countywide. Now, it was a dispute at the celebration because the people were still gaming, but we had sold more tickets than anybody else. And what happened was white people did not want to accept that. So what they did was at the end of the event, you know, almost end of the event, they got together in different precincts or different districts, pooled their money to beat us, okay? You know, we doing about it, they pooled it, but what happened was the people were counting the money and the tickets. They told me, you know, that Tommy, they cheating. I said, what do you mean? They getting together in different precincts and different areas and putting their money together to overcome your money. So what I did was, you know, we had about 15, 20 minutes later, before the event was over, I went around and got collected some more money. And we won. You know, we got the trophy. But you know, that was unheard of. The district was growing. The district, we got them involved. And from that power, we made them respect us. And we made them, hey, look, when we do this for you or for the county, you know, you have to give us some position. You know? So it got so that on the Democratic Central Committee, it was split, like I say, 5-5. Well, the so-called liberals, we beat the conservatives because my vote, I was a sixth vote, okay, out of 11, that turned the tide on which way we were going. You know, so you know, we just did a lot of things that got people involved, but the people have to respect what you're doing, have to believe in you, and everybody want to work. Everybody want to work. And the key to it is having people around you that is good. Because we tried to pick some of the best people out of Prince George's County, or out of my district, that could do the job. Parking planning. They never had a black on parking planning, you know. But parking planning, all the parks, you know, come under that. We had a strong man in there, a guy named Mr. Brown, you know, from Glenarden. Well, he was very forceful and very militant, you know. We got him on parking planning. That's why they started putting parks in black community. He was so good at it that the people came to me, the white folk, came to me and wanted to get him off the committee. They came to me and said, Broadwater, we give you two appointments if you just let his term run out. Oh, no. I said, no, oh, no, we're not going to do that. You know, he's there to be protected. He's there. He's fighting for his community. You know, but he was at that time a strong force in our community and was determined to get things done for us. Yeah, and that's how we operated. You know, the people that were around me were some of the best brains in Prince George's County and was aggressive, and they wanted something done for us. And the key factor in all that is that when those people get out and fight for you or fight for their community, usually the white community try to figure out a way to get rid of them. Well, in our district,
No question.
You know,
definitely
in our
works.
District, they had to come through me. You know, so I would not let them get rid of our people. We wanted strong militants, as at that time we would call them, and smart people, and that's what we did. I mean, the people in that we put on those boards and all that type of stuff, they were the top people. And how Wayne came along.
Today, Tommy, in Prince George's County, there's no machine like the machine that you had going. What was your relationship with the attorney Billy Murphy and Joe Valerio? What was your connection
Joe
with
Valerio?
Them?
Well,
yeah, Joe Valerio and Bill Murphy. What was your connection
well,
with those
two? Well, Joe Valerio at that time was – I think Joe was an attorney, and I think he was an accountant or something like that. Well, he helped me to put things together. In other words, he's one of the guys who worked with me to give the black community power, okay? In other words, he was speaking up for us along with us when it wasn't popular. Billy Murphy was a brain and a heck of an attorney, and he came to Prince George County to a lot of our events, and he was one of my brain thrust persons that you know you talk to along with Clarence Mitchell and people like that, you know. But the point is that you surround yourself with talent, people who think similar to where you think and want to do something or get something done, and can be even better at things than you. You know, I want people around me that's better than things than me that I am. You know. You helped me to put the thing together, and you can't be selfish. You know, the thing is that get your talent, get people that's going to work with you, and work for the cause. And that's what it's all about. Because you can't do
Mike
it by
Miller?
Yourself.
What about Mike Miller? Mike Miller, they say he has a powerful influence in VG County. Is he still existing today? Does he have as much power as he did
back
then?
Well, you know, Mike passed
Mike
a few
passed.
Months ago.
Okay.
Living president of Maryland, of the Senate, than anybody in the whole country, United States of America.
In the whole country,
he came up
when we,
you know. Yeah, well, Mike and I, you know, we used to fight each other. You know, they did an article in Washington Post years ago where I accused Mike that Mike was a basic conservative, and I said that in the article came out that. I said, Mike is the type of person that kisses your babies, hugs your black women, and you think that he's for you, but the point is that he votes against you. You know, and I said that in the post, but from that, Mike and I became pretty close. You know, because we were. Doing battle with each other, but the point is that he respected me, you know, and I knew where the power base was, but you know, we respected each other. And see, Stinney played a great role in us doing things because we was just tight, and we helped him, you know, and he passed, got to be the president of the Maryland State Senate by one vote, and we got five blacks. Out of six to vote for him, Stinney won the president of the Maryland State Senate by one vote. They're giving that type of power. You know,
see the vision to buy that property off of Sheriff Road? That whole entire property is owned by you. How did you see the vision? Was it very expensive? Did you get the money by yourself? What made you see the vision to buy that whole section on Sheriff Road, across the street, parking lot? The Ebony End, the liquor store, and you had the Bales Bondsman, but that's a valuable piece of property over there. What made you to see the vision?
Well, what happened was that when in our community, the people who seemed to have were prosperous, who had the money or who was really dealing, were bondsmen, and they were had grocery stores and stuff like that. You know, Mr. Hamilton, Mr. Mizell. People like that, and they were writing on their property, because at that time, the insurance companies would not hire blacks, would not let blacks write bonds on the insurance company, so you had to put up your property to write bonds against it. So what happened was, I went to Southeastern University and all that kind of stuff, and was insurance was one of the top agents in Washington selling insurance. I needed something else to do, so I went to them and said, "Look, I want to be a bondsman." But I was so young, they were older guys. They didn't really want that now, you know. But, matter of fact, they told me I couldn't do it. So I used to be with Judge Taylor and Frankie Bowen and all those guys. And so I went down to get to be a bondsman. When I went down, I think I had $2,000. And, when I went down, to the state's attorney, because you had to go through the state's attorney to get to be a bondsman. And I asked them, you know, to let me in as a bondsman. They told me, they said, well, look, you have to have real estate. You can't have cash money, because I think I had a couple $1,000s. But anyway, they said, you have to have real estate. This has got to be free and clear. And I was very disappointing. And one of the lawyers, as a matter of fact, I happened to be a judge afterwards, Judge Johnson, he was coming up on the elevator, and he told the state's attorney, he said, look, this is one of our guys, and you know, help him all you can. But the assistant state's attorney told me that we can't accept your money. You know, you had to have property. So when I go home, and I was married, when I go to my mother and father, I was really down, you know. And I said, told him, I said, well, the problem is that I can't be a bondsman because I have to have real estate that's free and clear. My mother looked at me and said, oh, yeah? She said, well, you know, talked to my father, he said, you know, we only owe $2,500 on our house. What we'll do is we'll sign it over to you, and you take that $2,500 and you pay the thing off, and we'll sign it over to you. And that's how I got in the bonding business. My mother and father saw it enough of me, to do that. And I had eight or nine sisters and brothers. So they gave their whole life saving to me. And that's how I became a bondsman. And from becoming a bondsman, I never looked back. Because to write bonds, you had to keep buying property, you know. And that's the only way I could make it. So every time I got to my list, my top level in writing bonds, I had to buy another piece of property. And I bought another piece of property, another piece of property. But my mother and father gave me the opportunity to do that.
The seed to do it. Now, is that a story? This is pulling your eyelids open. You had a family member sign the house over to you for $2,500. Then you
That's
had
all they
other
owed
family
on their
members
house
put up money
at that time. And my mother, we had sisters and brothers and all that kind. And they took enough into me and said, we're going to give you our house. You pay off that house thing, and we help you pay it off, and you can use our house as your collateral. And that's how I got started, the house in Chapel Oaks. And I never looked back.
That's a serious story.
You know, and that's why I tell people that.
The bonds bailment business is a profitable business. There's a lot of money to be made with the bonds bailment business. I mean, there's a lot of money. You don't have very many blocks of the bonds bailment. There's a lot of money to be made with the bonds bailment.
Yeah, well, it used to be now, and they changing the system now to letting people out on the monitors and all that kind of stuff. But
that's right. Yeah, you got the monitors now. You don't have people that's on house arrest and stuff like that. You got people
over 50 years, almost 60 years. And as
that's
I
a long time.
Oh yeah, well you know, and that's how I accumulated the little wealth that I accumulated, you know. And then property down here on Sheriff Road, I mean on 301. So I had some friends who had that property, and who was losing it. Okay, and what happened was, we were living in Glen Arden, and I'd had promised my wife. I said, "What we're gonna do? We're gonna build a fabulous home. I'm going to get about $500,000 and buy some land, and we're going to build a house. I spend about $600,000 building a house. And that house is going to be worth well over $1 million. You know, that's what we talked about that. And so and I had my friends I went to school with to draw up plans and all this kind of stuff. So I bought some land behind the First Baptist Church in Glen Arden, almost a whole block, and was planning to build my wife the dream house. Well, some attorneys I knew who were top real estate guys in Prince George's County had that land, and they got in trouble. You know, they were top guys when Wendy Keller was in the office. They had an article on them in the Washington Post in the business section where they had three guys under a tree saying that if you want to do anything in Prince George's County, building and construction, go through them, okay? Well, what happened was the real estate market boomed out. I mean, fell to the bottom in Prince George County. And they had owned that property. Well, they were being foreclosed on. And they came to me and said, look, man, we need $18,000. That's what they thought, to save the property. Okay? But they couldn't raise the money at that time. And they came to me, and I said, okay. You know, they were going to give me the house, the big house, and 5 acres of land if I put up another $100,000. Okay? And so that's what we did. We call ourselves doing that. But the point is that we went to auction at the courthouse. I had never been to an auction. Went to the courthouse. The stuff was in my name because I gave them a check for the $18,000 certified check. So the auctioneer considered me as the one who was, you know, auctioning this property, or dealing with the auction. And we bid it. And I think the bid came in a little over $1 million. And we won the auction, and that's how it got in my name. But from that, you know, I fought RTC, and you know, for 2 years to get the property. But the point is that we got it, and been going ever since. Now I'm still catching hell But the point is, you know.
That's a nice piece of property out there, the health piece of property on 301. I mean, the land, everything is off the chain. Tell us how you got into the grocery business. Now, you was a black man owning a grocery store. What made you go into the grocery business?
Well, see, I was just an entrepreneur, you know, and I wasn't afraid to take chances. And I wanted to be financially independent. But that's something I thought was that we could make some money off and help the community. And that's how I got into it. The one off of Branch Avenue, we had one over there, and it didn't work out. Then we got the one on Sheriff Road. We used to be a Safeway store. I got involved with that and got that land over there and worked it, you know. Like I say, by buying real estate was the thing, and just taking a chance. But
I
was raised in
Chapel
Oak
City. But Tommy, how do you stay so strong with even the controversy of you having situations that you had to – you know, resign and go to jail and come back? How do you be so strong? How do you come back to be so strong and positive today?
Talking to the man upstairs. you got to deal with it. It ain't the problem, it's how you handle the problem. You know, that's always been my motto. You know, it ain't the problem, it's how you handle it. And you just got to deal with it. With the store across the street, you know, you take your chance, you do what you got to do, and you move into something else. I had the store, the gas station, and was involved with Ebony Inn. Okay, now I worked at Ebony Inn as a kid from 16 years to now. Okay, well, when the opportunity came for me to buy half of Ebony Inn, and that came about because the two partners who had it. I worked there, and Mr. Screen, who was a partner, he was kind of feuding a little bit with his partner. But the point is that he liked me, you know. And when he came to sell his half of it, he didn't sell it to his partner who wanted it. He sold it to me. You know, he said that he wanted me to have it because I knew the business and that he felt I would do well. And when he sold his part to me, I end up 10, 15 years later buying my other partner out, and that's how Ebony Inn came about, us owning all of Ebony Inn.
That's a money-making venue. You had the liquor license and you had the Ebony Inn. And how did the barbecue come about? Who was that recipe? Was that your grandmother's recipe, or was that something that you created?
No, that was
for the barbecue?
Mr. Palmer, who lived in Chapel Oaks, and his wife. It used to be a gas station. Ebony Inn used to be a gas station. And they had a shopping center across the street. Well, Mr. Palmer, who was a hard-working guy, his wife and him were entrepreneurs, and he eventually added on, and he built that building. And the place was, Ebony Inn was noted for, it was the hangout spot for people in the metropolitan area. And Fairmont Heights, Chapel Oaks, and the wheels used to come from D.C. To patronize. You know, at that time, you could not buy liquor on Sunday in D.C. or what have you. What they did was they came out there, going to the beach, buying the beer. We used to have lines down the street, people coming through the drive-in window, and Ebony Inn had the first drive-in window in the state of Maryland. This is how. Foresight that Mr. Palmer had. Okay, he built the first drive-in window in the state of Maryland to sell beer.
Now that's
okay.
History right there. The first drive-in liquor store
window. The first drive-in window in the state of Maryland, and people used to be lined up almost a half a block away to come through that line to get beer on Sunday. Okay, and I was out in the back as a youngster, and he had a barbecue pit in the back. Okay, I cooked barbecue. And served barbecue in the back. So people used to drive up, turn around in the gravel out back of the place and come back to the barbecue window, to the liquor store, and, get their liquor and the beer. I just could not understand how somebody, and that was on a Sunday, I could not understand how people drink so much beer as a little kid. But you know, that's how I worked. And I was taught how to cook barbecue from the guy up the street. Mr. Hamilton's brother had the glass house drive-in. And then this man I worked for, he was a master watchmaker. He was a Pullman porter. He was a cab driver. And he was the one who taught me how to cook barbecue. And he owned what they call the glass house drive-in, which I felt was the cleanest place in Washington, D.C. We had stainless steel background, okay? And he was just a master at what he did. And him and his wife took me under their wing from about 13 years old till I got married, went to the hospital, came back, and he told me, he said, look, I can't pay you the money that you need to make. So therefore, Mr. Palmer is opening up a barbecue pit in the back of his place. I want you to go up there and show him what you know. You run his barbecue pit for him. And he said, I taught you how to cook barbecue. And, they, you know, the main barbecue place was down the bottom of the hill. It used to be the Silver Meter. You might have heard of that. They sold more barbecue than anybody in Washington, Bellevue area. But Palmer had one up the street. And I went up there, and I took over his barbecue pit. At, I think I was about 16, 17. And then Mr. Palmer ended up building a building down the street where they have a nursery school now. He built a new building. And I was managing that at 19 years old. Okay? And that's how I got in the insurance business. You know, the insurance man came at it to get something to eat and wanted to sell me some insurance. I was married, had two or three children, kids at that time, and he came in to sell me some insurance. Well, I had always dressed well, you know, and wanted to be a person who wore a suit, you know. So when he came in to sell me some insurance, I said to him, I bought some insurance from him. And he said, I said to him, I said, well, how you get it to be an insurance man? He said, see me, you know. Make a long story short, he introduced me to Progressive Insurance Company. It used to be up on 60 Northwest, right behind Hex. I went there, I called, and they told me to come in. I went in, and they signed me up to be an insurance salesman. You know, insurance is a field all of its own. With a capital everything. So I was 19 years old, okay? And went through the process. They come to find out they were hiring me. They had hired me, but they didn't know I was 19 years old because I had three kids at the time. And so they hired me, and I'm going through training, and then they had to fire me because I was 19. And you had to be 21 to be an insurance agent. Or you had to have a bond, or you had to have a $500 book. You know, they had to bond that book for $500. So I had my wife, three kids, apartment in Southeast. And the guy said, Mr. Broadwater, we can't hire you because you're only 19. We can't, you know, we had to let you go. And I said, why? He said, because you had to have a $500 book, and you got to be insured, and we can't insure you. So I said, okay. I was so hurt. Because it gave me everything I wanted. I could wear the suits. I could sell. So I said, well, suppose I put up $500 cash. And he said, hold, what do you mean? I said, suppose I give you my $500 that you can put up for a bond so I can write insurance. He said, hold it. So he went and talked to the supervisor, came back and said, you have $500? I said, I have $500. He said, come on down to the office. He thought I was bluffing. I gave him $500, and I started writing insurance. And they held my $500 for a bond. And I was breaking all kinds of records in D.C. Selling insurance and Prince George County. Also, that's how I met Ted Higgins. You know, Ted Higgins was the chairman of the D.C. Chamber of Commerce, you know, especially the black D.C. Chamber. And that's how I met him. We became very close. But, this is how things progress.
Well, you were super, like I say, for all you have done, where you came from and where you're at today, but to be able to be in a position where you were convicted of food stamp fraud, went to jail for 4 months, ran again for your office. Now, here's your determination, Tommy. You came out of jail after 4 months and determined you were going to run again for your office, but you didn't win. Mm-hmm. But then something hit you, and you said, I don't need to be in a public office. I can still have influence. still have
influence. Well, you know,
influence.
What happened was that I guess, you know, I was the community's boy, you know, and my neighbors, when I went away, the reporters came by and tried to get some, you know, talk about me. And people, my neighbors said, look, we love him. He's our guy, you know. And when I came home, my thing was to try to save my businesses, try to keep my family going, and just kept working at what I was doing. And the people supported me. And basically, my whole philosophy in life is I treat people decent. I don't know of anybody I've messed over. You hear what I say? I don't know of anybody I've ever messed over because I try not to. And I've been in the bonding business, insurance business, and some of the roughest business in the world. But the point is that my attitude is that you don't have to mess over people to get rich. I mean, to get ahead financially. You don't have to do that. And I try to treat people decent. And in politics, you know, it's a rough business. But I don't mess over anybody in politics. I fight for my people. I believe in fighting to death. You know, when we're fighting for a cause,
but that's what it's about.
You fight
it's about. You
to
don't have
end.
To mess over anybody. You don't have to treat people
that's right.
bad.
You don't have to do that.
I believe in the same concept. Don't treat no one bad. Treat people decent and make people feel good. This has been a pleasure and an honor to have you on this podcast. This is a big podcast in the nation's capital. I want you to thank you for taking the time out, but also I want you to give us your closing statements, Tommy, because you have given us a wealth of information. You know where the bodies are buried, and you shared some information today to let people know that you are an individual, one man, who made a difference in Prince George's County. PG County today owes you. Let's say that again, owes you. I want to ring the bell. PG County owes you. Because you were there in the infancy, the making of Prince George's County. What you see today in people who are county executives and Governor Hogan, and they don't have an idea of what you did or who you are. Give us your closing statements.
Well, the thing is, that like I said before, you know, treat people decent and you gain respect. And I love doing what I do. You know, and I love people, you know, and that's what it's all about. And if you're going to be in public office, surround yourself with people that either think like you or want to be a part of what you're doing and want to treat their people and get their people ahead. That's what it's all about.
This has been Pulling Your Eyelids Open. My name is Russell Price. We're celebrating 45 years of publishing, and you have been blessed with information from Tommy Boardwater. Again, thank you. This is Pulling Your Eyelids Open. See you Monday morning. It's going to be a big one.
And keep the good work up.
Thank you.
Thank you.